Welcome, everyone, to the 103rd episode of the New Gen Mindset Podcast. I'm here with Nick Tartaglia, and I'm Dan Kozel. It's the holidays, man.
It is
we
the
made
holidays.
It. We made it. We made it to the end of the year. Lots of stuff happening. And what we've saw or what we've seen over the last couple of months, especially on the rate side, and we keep talking about this, is there's been a dwindling, you know, treasury bonds are rising and that means yields are going down. And what we wanted to do today is have a conversation, somebody local, to talk about what's happening in the market. But before we do that, what is your prediction for next year going into the market?
We're talking rate hikes?
Or
we're talking
not rate hikes. Just in general, what is your prediction going into next year?
So we're talking just general macro.
Just the market, man.
Market. So I think market's going to go sideways. There might be still the melt up, I think we're talking about. That's from the pullback. I mean, JP Morgan, the head of JP Morgan just came out saying precisely that if the rate cut happens, the market will most likely explode. But again, that's just more of a, this is financial markets. I'm talking specifically, let's say stocks and everything. That's more of just a fad. It's not fundamentally something good. It's just because, oh, look at that. Money is cheap again type of perspective. That I think there'll be more geopolitic conflict will add a lot of more pressure and demand for liquidity. And I think it's going to be choppy sideways until people start having a better understanding of where they think rates are going. Cause right now everybody still seems to be confused.
So we like to talk about rates and we like to talk about the real estate market. So what we wanted to do today is bring somebody on here who's absolutely crushing it. He had a great year. How many deals did you do this year? 40 transactions?
40 transactions in my first 20 months.
There you go. Yeah. Guys, welcome to the New Gen Mindset Podcast, Chuck Frischman.
Thank you. Before we start, by the way, guys, a little gift.
Oh, thank you. Look at that.
Thanks,
man. Thank you so much, man. We have a lot to celebrate, actually. I will shake your hand right now just for that.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, fellow.
Appreciate it.
So look, what we wanted to do today is just have an in-depth understanding about what you're seeing in the real estate market. Because we
the
like
street level.
At the street level, because that's obviously the most important thing. And a lot of you have been following us. We like to kind of chirp some of the real estate agents that are out there, but we want to bring them on and have that dialogue. We're not going to say no, like let's talk about it. But before we do that, walk us through your journey. How did you get to where you're at? Why did you decide to become a real estate agent?
Ooh, simple answer for that one. COVID hit. I was a nutritionist, naturopath, and strength coach. Gyms got closed. And I was like, hey, if there's ever been a time, take the course and try it, it's now. And that's exactly what I did. And I haven't looked back since, honestly.
Yeah. So you're happy with the journey kind of started going on the
side? Oh, there have been like multiple instances where I was like almost crying and saying like, did I fuck up? I want to quit. And I think that's just like part of it. But I'm so happy that I did it. And anything worth having is always hard.
Exactly.
You got to work for it. Trust me, I've cried too. I'll just throw that out there. That's part of the battle, guys. Just an FYI.
It's an ultra competitive industry, especially Montreal. Like everybody knows 5-6 brokers.
Exactly. And so, I would say, especially when you said you started getting into it during COVID, I feel like that was when we saw an immense amount of people starting to seek out that type of profession, which just makes it more complicated. And obviously there's a fixed pie and now you have more and more people competing for that pie. So obviously the quality of your profession, who you speak to, the network you have, and your ability to actually articulate what you're trying to do and how to help your clients obviously kind of is what's necessary to kind of get ahead of when there's so many people trying to do this.
Oh, for sure. You need to bring something a little bit different than everybody else to stand out at the end of the day. And I think it's like that with anything you do in life. It's always the top 10% of any industry that are really excelling, you know, and that's just it.
They're generating probably 90% of the revenue. But so look, walk us back, I guess, to that time, right? Like COVID happened, you kind of shat the bed, but that's normal. It's human nature, right? Because you're just like, what am I going to do with my life? There's like that little component in your mind that's telling you, give up, do this, get a job.
Yeah.
What made you pursue that aggressively? And then bring you to a point where you're just like, I'm going to do this full time. Like, what was that one thing in your mind?
I actually wanted to go into real estate when I was much younger. And my parents kind of talked me out of it. They're like, no, go back to university, get your degree, finish that. Like, you're 21. Who the hell is going to buy a house from you? And so that's what I did. And then I kind of put it on the back burner and things just really took off with my business in between that time. And then, you know, COVID, and I was like, okay, let's revisit that. This is really my one and only time where I'm going to have enough downtime to actually pick something else up. And it took about a year to get the license. Like everything else in Quebec, everything here is slow. but it was worth it. I'm really, really glad I did it. I love what I do. Yeah.
You took advantage. I mean, I get it. For people that don't necessarily know, here in Quebec, we were locked down for almost a year and a half in terms of curfews. You know, So you didn't really have the ability to do anything. So if you didn't find something to do at home, forget it. I think you wasted so much of your time. So it's cool to see that certain people, like I did it for myself, and you know, we went on the journey of creating a podcast during it. So if people didn't find something to really focus their energy and build out their stimulate their mind and build out more assets and skills for themselves, that was a huge wasted period of time for a lot of people.
For sure. And I figured even if I don't love it and I actually hate it, I just learned something new.
Correct.
Exactly. And I could apply it to my own life in the future when I want to go buy real estate, and at the same time, I'll learn about investing and whatnot. Exactly. And so I figured it's a win-win no matter what. Even if I hate it, I could always go back to what I was doing before. I was very successful with it. And if I love it, then even better.
Correct.
You know, so that was it. That was my mindset, really.
No, that's important, especially during that time. I still remember the curfews. Oh my God. That was like, so anyway, we're not going to talk about that, but it just, we did a whole episode last week on government intervention, and like, that's just a prime example of that. But so look, the last 3 years in real estate have been very fascinating because you have seen rates hit probably at 0% all-time lows. We had that for the last 15 years. Then COVID happened. Rates went to zero. I think I remember that day so perfectly. It was March 13th, 2020, where Powell came out and said rates are going to zero. Bank of Canada followed suit, and you had like this momentum in real estate at the time. So when did you actually start going to the market and doing some transactions? Was it 2020? Was it 2021?
It must have been end of 2021. Yeah.
So rates were halfway through, or they were like halfway through their rate.
It was March 2021. Sorry.
So it's a year later.
Rate hike were just, or they were just starting to talk about inflation and the potential of rate hikes.
So during that.
My first year was really fun. In real estate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But that's the key. Like, talk more about that. Cause those are the interesting stories.
But I was already looking at it from 2019. Like, I bought my first condo 8 years ago. And I'd always been keeping an eye on the market. It's something I was always watching. And so it's crazy because what any broker that started in 2020 or 2021 has witnessed, no other broker in the history of real estate has gone to see. Like, that cycle that we went through is unprecedented.
I think it's almost for all asset classes, by the way.
Yeah, even stocks, I think, were just like off
gold
the chain.
Name it.
So having to adjust to that, unless you went a step further and started educating yourself on what's happening on a macro level in the economy, you were just floating around giving people the wrong advice. You know, and I was lucky because I graduated from economics, so I have a little bit better of an understanding, and I keep an eye on certain things that most brokers who just went from selling cars to selling houses.
Or insurance.
Have that insight, you know? So, yeah.
No, it's key. It helps a lot too, because the thing is, sometimes people don't realize is, you know, it's building a relationship with a client doesn't necessarily mean a short-term transaction. It could be a long-term thing, relationship where they trust you as someone that when I need to go to the market, I know that your eyes are objectively looking at the market, and which means that if I want to be a buyer, not just for one time with you, but in perpetuity, annually, or buy multiple properties, I know I have someone that's going to look at the market from an objective lens to help me find the time when it's best suited for my needs.
Yeah.
Whereas rather folks purely are just trying to sell, and then it's like whoever buys, buys, or sells, sells. But then it's like, I don't get to build a relationship. I don't get to build proper investment clients that buy a lot of real estate. Because those guys, they want people that are going to have their back.
Yeah.
So that advantage you have is key, especially I find in this environment where a lot of real estate people don't understand the conditions they operate in, which is odd because they're going to say things that don't make sense, or they're going to say, you know,
that's why we chirp the real estate community, because, and it's nothing personal against,
it's a little cheesy.
It is a little cheesy, but
it is
that is it's one of those things that kind of drives me a little bit crazy, because it's like people need to understand market cycles, right? They need to fundamentally have a grasp on that, because to Nick's point, you're trying to build a long-term relationship. What I've realized, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, in the real estate community, for whatever reason, there seems to be this perception that everyone's just in it for a transactional relationship, right? So you've been around, you've been doing this for 3 years now, or two years. What have you noticed in Montreal in particular that could be better? And what do you feel like is something that we're really good at right now?
Well, for one, we did not experience a huge fluctuation like a lot of other major cities experienced during the same time period. So what that tells me is that Montreal is a little safer, also still very undervalued compared to a lot of the other major cities or other markets in Canada. What people don't realize actually is that there's six other major cities that are still more expensive than Montreal to buy in. You know, you have Hamilton, Calgary, Ottawa, Toronto, Vancouver, and Victoria. And so, you know, when you had people in 2021 or 2022 coming out and predicting, like these economists predicting, oh, there's going to be a huge crash, 20, 25. I even think that the National Post, there was an article I read, it was like 30%. What they failed to realize is that the law of supply and demand will always reign supreme. Okay. And so I was telling my clients who were freaking out and weren't sure, were on the fence, I was like, that's bullshit. You know, they have no idea what they're talking about. Because just alone, I mean, in 2022, we brought in, I think, 437,000
immigrants.
Yep. And we only built 207,000 new homes. Correct. And in 2023, we brought in 371,000 new immigrants. And I think next year they're approximating we're going to have 500,000. So just with that knowledge, and that's not even taking into consideration the population we already have here,
or the students
that's just growing.
Or yeah, the students coming in and taking up.
Or property. Students coming in. So with that knowledge, I was able to tell my clients, like, hey, no, I don't think prices are going to get gouged. Like, relax. Don't worry. Don't, like, freak out and just sell if you bought a year or two ago. Like, it's going to be okay. And look, average housing prices in Montreal from our all-time high only came down 6.7%. And the last time we've had a drop in housing prices in Montreal was 1989. So there's not too many stocks you could have bought that would have stayed in the green for the last 33 plus years straight. So if you have an understanding of economics and what's going on a little bit more on a macro level, it really helps you to give better advice to your clients when they're trying to decide whether they should buy, whether it's the right time for them to buy or sell right now.
That's a good point, though, with the real estate. So you're saying that in 1989 was the last time price appreciation was in a decline. It was
in the red.
It was in the red.
In Montreal, average home prices.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a desirable city. I get it. And that's why another thing is, obviously, when we have these conversations, again, we chirp a lot of the people in this community. Again, it's more because of the fact that there's so many people in the real estate community, and a lot of them don't actually understand the market conditions. But there's things you have to bring into the question is when we chirp, it's generalized. Obviously, when you break it down and you go more into the details, there's individuals that don't apply that are not specific to that generalization that we make. And there's also the things you have to look at is location. What are the general market conditions? What are the central banks doing? What are immigration policies? What are government housing policies? You know, now we have things talking about where government wants to do rent control. Guys, rent control, all it does is it limits the supply of new homes, because then you have no incentive to build homes and actually price things according to what I need to price. So then developers say, well, forget, I'm not going to build new things because I'm not going to make money on it. So then you're just...
There was that tax, right, that Valerie Plante was trying to put on new developers.
And they just paid it.
They didn't even care at that point.
They made more money anyway.
Yeah,
exactly. The cost just goes down anyway to the people paying for all these properties. So these interventions government think they're solving, if the best solution is get the hell out of the way, let us keep our money, and then we'll be able to afford things again. Yeah. That's literally it. But, you know, so again, when it comes back to the real estate, who you talk to, what you talk about, the conditions and how you dissect them all comes into play. That's just our thing, because we're more of a macro guys, so we like to generalize things. Yeah. But then when you go into the details, things obviously will change.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that in this upcoming year, we're going to be sort of in a repeat of the 2019 situation, the pre-COVID, everybody who didn't buy then is going to be kicking themselves in the ass because we're already starting to see the prices start to come back up again. So I think we have this like sweet spot of like the next 3 months that I think are going to be the best time to buy before, you know, housing prices are never the same as what they used to be.
You're looking for another environment, you're saying, to look.
Yeah, like for sure. I think by March, the interest rates are going to start to come down. Yeah. And as soon as that happens, I mean, demand's going to go up. And unless supply, new homes available on the market, goes up by more than the amount of demand increasing.
And that's related to immigration too, right? Because they're talking about half a million new immigrants coming in. So that's going to have crazy effects.
Yeah. And I don't think we're going to be building over 350,000 new homes. And we're already in a huge housing shortage in Canada, but especially in Quebec. So there's also that to consider.
We don't even take into account the technical skills required that a lot of younger generations don't even go into building out those skills that are needed to building all those homes. Yeah. So the lack of skill and labor alone impacts the prices of homes because it takes longer to build things. It's more complicated, more mistakes.
Well, I just read an article that was actually talking about how the government's trying to incentivize more builders to build or to actually get like builders, like physical builders, construction workers to go and build more houses. That's how dire it's becoming. They also just removed the GST on new projects.
Oh, yes, I remember.
So that I did see. I read about that actually 2 days ago, which is actually, it's one of the positive things that I think this government is actually doing right now.
I agree with that as well.
Yeah. As a contrarian to government, I always say, if they do that, they're going to try to fuck you somewhere else. That's just me. That's how I do. That's
obviously.
Well, the property taxes.
No, but exactly. It's good. If it's in good faith, that's a good thing.
Yeah. I think they realize that we're really in a squeeze right now. And the ball's already started rolling down that hill and it's picking up momentum.
That's exactly. And that's why I think, going back, that's why rate cut, when we talk about North American wealth, a lot of the wealth is associated to housing or real estate in general because it makes such a huge component of the equity in North America. So when we start talking about these interest rates going up and going down and going sideways, people have to take account is how much pressure does the rates have on assets and their impact of driving prices down. Now, government spending in the West is heavily correlated to the wealth of the economy.
Consumption too, right?
You know, so that's it, exactly. So the wealth effect also leads to consumption. Yep. The richer I feel, the more I spend. So you'd obviously from a government standpoint, from a central standpoint, if you want to maintain the control you have of the economy, you want to maintain your spending, you want to maintain your behaviors, you cannot allow the majority of the wealth of the economy to fall because then it puts everything they're doing into question and then they'll have to start cutting back and changing everything they're doing. So from their standpoint, from a central standpoint, they don't want that. So obviously coming into this environment, you're seeing rates going sideways because they know it's going to put too much pressure in the next 2 years. So I think they're going sideways now. And like you said, rates are coming down. And I definitely think they're coming down too. And I think it's going to be sometime late first quarter, early second quarter. So it probably falls within your range as well.
Yeah, in March, April, I think.
Something like that. That's what I'm thinking too, because they're going to go a couple months sideways, see how things are going, and they're like, oh, okay, now we need to start lowering it.
Yeah, well, what people don't realize also is you could cut discretionary spending, but people still need a place to live. Yeah, exactly. That's the last thing people are going to cut back on.
Yep.
They need a place for their families to live.
Yep. Right. I've cut discretionary spending.
They'll give back their car before they give back the keys to their house.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So
it's the first thing that gets cut is discretionary. So you're absolutely right. Yeah. I want to talk about something that's really interesting too. And this has been sort of I don't want to call it a philosophy, but sort of a mindset of like, okay, renting versus owning a property. Don't get me wrong. I think everybody should own real estate. Long-term, great investment, depends on the type of real estate. That's what, you know, I get my real estate exposure right now through REITs, right? Or private real estate funds. You just park, you put a little bit of sum of money, you do that. But there's a lot of people right now, especially entering the job market, especially students, young millennials, Gen Zs especially, they're getting priced out of that ownership. And that's been like the biggest discussion. My philosophy has always been, it's better to rent where you live and to own what you can rent out. So I want to just understand, is that something that you believe in? Is that something that you maybe disagree with? Like, what's sort of your general intake on that? Knowing fully well that, look, I think everybody on this panel right now, we all think real estate's a great investment, but do you feel like it's better to rent where you live? Because at the end of the day, it's a consumption quarter, right?
Look, it really depends what your goals are. financially or fiscally. A lot of people, they're not going to take the time, or they know they're not going to try and learn about stocks and other types of investments. So for them, no matter what you tell them, it's still the safest place for them to just park their money, even if it's just a condo that they're going to live in for themselves. Because they're not going to start opening up, you know, accounts to start trading stocks.
And got too much things going on, life, family, relationships.
Yeah, it's work. So for, I think, a lot of people, it's just a no-brainer. It's just like, okay, let me just buy where I'm living. At least I'm not lighting the cash on fire by renting, and at least I know it's safe.
I just want to validate what you're saying by saying majority of North American pension is tied into their real estate. So a lot of people, old people, their entire pension and their savings for their retirement is tied to the wealth of their house.
Yeah.
And then when they retire, they either sell it, they refinance it, and they do something else like that.
And look, to answer your question more directly, I think if you want to get into real estate, you have to start somewhere. So I was lucky. I bought a condo back in end of 2014 or 2015. I forget which year. I sold it. I made some good money on it. But then I took that money and I went and I invested with two other friends of mine in a 26-plex in Gatineau. You have to start somewhere. Now I'm paying rent. I've been renting for the last 2 years straight. And now I put that money into an income property with multiple doors. But had I not bought that condo, lived in it for a few years, let it gain some equity, sold it, then I have the money to go and play with. It's hard for people to save up $200,000-$400,000.
So you're They're saying also it's like a forced mechanism where it indirectly forces you to have to save through your house equity.
It's an interesting way of looking at it now.
Because you're paying it down every month.
Exactly.
No, but I get it, because also at the same time, you made a good point. A lot of people don't have the ability to actually dissect their finances, make those proper decisions, say, I need to save here, do this, this. This kind of is a forced channel that drives them to have to save.
Because you have, first of all, I think it's because there's that leverage component, right? Yeah. So let's say you $400,000 property, what do you need to put down? 25%? So what is that? Like,
or even 20%. Or 20%. If it's your first home, you don't have to put down 20. You could put down less.
Yeah, so it's like 40 grand. You put 40 grand in, take out a mortgage, hold it for maybe 2-3 years, maybe 7 years.
Even when rates come down, you could always just refinance it.
Yeah.
You could use your house as your piggy bank,
then
basically.
And then what you do is you sell the property, you get the cash, close the mortgage, and then take that cash and just buy it into
Like when I sold my condo, I could have easily taken all that money and gone and bought a family home. But then I was like, no, it's smarter to continue to rent and take that money and invest it in a multiplex, because we have a huge housing crisis right now and the rents are just going up astronomically, and they're going to continue to go up. So that for me made the most sense at the time.
So that's another thing too now, which is the rents and the mortgage payments have been going up, right? And the mortgage payments at some point have exceeded the rent payments. But I think rent, like you said, is going to catch up to that. So what do you feel like is the outlook for next year on rents in Montreal, considering we've had probably the cheapest rents in all of Canada, by the way?
Of the major cities in Canada, like I said, we're still undervalued. We're still cheaper, honestly, which is a little scary to think about. But I do think that the rent prices are going to keep going up, just because we're not supplying the market with enough new properties to meet the demand. So the longer that keeps happening, the larger the disparity is going to keep getting between supply and demand. And what happens? Prices keep going up. So I think that for both buying and reselling, home prices they're going to continue to go up, but so are rents. Big time. Yeah. The government's already talking about cutting the amount of international students they're going to allow into Quebec next year, because...
You should have done that 4 years ago, but anyway, another conversation.
We should have done a lot of things 4 or 5 years ago. But yeah, so that just goes to show you. And these people are paying like triple or quadruple the price for their tuitions, right? So it's good business. But it just goes to show you how much we're lacking rental units in the metropolitan or downtown area of Montreal, that they're willing to cut back on international students.
So go more into Montreal. Like, tell us, what are you seeing in Montreal? Like, abnormalities, things that you think are positive or things that are negative from a real estate standpoint at street level Montreal. Just what are you seeing in any direction?
Well, the fact that even though we got hit by probably the worst interest rates in, 40 plus years?
It's swinging in the games of interest rates. Probably historical.
We remained in the seller's market. it's still never transitioned from a seller's market to a buyer's market. Buyer market, I think, is when the average time for a home sale is like 8 months plus. So anything below that 8 month threshold, you're still technically in a seller's market. So I don't think we even crossed over the 4 or 4.5 month point in terms of average time for a sale on a home. So what that tells me is it's still pretty much the safest place where you could put your money aside. Whereas stocks,
the volatility, absolutely.
Very volatile. No, of course, crypto, very volatile. So that's the one positive thing I could take away from the Montreal market specifically. I don't care about
New York City or whatever.
I focus in Quebec. That's where I work. So that's the one positive thing I would say you could take away from the Montreal market over the last couple of years, for sure. Negative, it's going to be tough for renters. Like, I put up a rental on Facebook Marketplace or on Centris, and I'm getting 30 messages. That's not really normal, you know?
But why is that? Is that because people are just, like, scared of owning a home? Like, what's causing that?
Well, first of all, unless you have two decent salaries and both of you are signing for the property, when interest rates are this high, it's hard to get approved on anything, especially first-time home buyers. They're the ones who really got screwed out of the market.
Well, that's why they created the, what is it, the FHSA?
Oh, the new, exactly.
8,000, but whatever. That doesn't really do much.
It's not going to change your life.
No, exactly.
Let me tell you. But yeah, so it's just the amount of people that would have gone and bought their first property in the last year and a half or 2 years just got priced out, and now interest rates priced them out. Double whammy. And so now we have a huge increase in demand for rental units.
So because all that home buying demand shifted to renting.
Exactly. So in a way, I think
that's the negative part.
So isn't that's a positive if you're running a business as a real estate agent, because it's good for rentals, but it creates an accelerated shortage period where people are like, okay, you fill out all these rentals, all the rentals get filled out, right? $1,500, $2,200, right? On average.
Yeah.
And then, okay, what happens when all theirs are filled? Well, then you've got people that are just starting, you know, their careers. They're like, where do I live? So well, now does this, so here's another question, because we're talking about Quebec.
Yeah.
I've noticed Blainville being a very attractive market, but homes there are going for $1 million, $2 million now, right? The suburbs, Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, all these other suburbs. Like, do we need to build more in the suburbs at this point? Because you can only build up in Montreal, right?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, I like I said, we just have a huge shortage of housing in general, on island, even off island, anywhere you go. So
we're gonna have to start creating towns.
the biggest challenge for Quebec and Canada in general is gonna be at the legislative level, where we need to cut back on the time it takes to get permits approved, the cost of getting these permits.
You're just saying, get the government out of the way. The problem.
Just get out of the way. Like, it doesn't make sense that the U.S. is smaller than Canada, has like what, quadruple our population, yet the average home price there is,
you're talking about land mass, right?
Yeah, is astronomically different, cheaper.
Yeah.
Why? Ease of building. Like, people want to go there and build because it's just easier to build and it costs less.
Yeah.
And the only reason why it does is due to governments and their intervention in the market. That's really the only reason. There's no other reason why it should be so much cheaper to build there than here.
They made that comparison, right? Where was it, Niagara Falls, where they had a house right over one
bridge? Yep.
And Buffalo,
and another
New York.
One, I think, was the one.
Buffalo, New York.
It was like 50% less.
It was half the price, but it was literally a 5-10 minute drive apart.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's literally wild, it. You know, so
it's kind of like looking at airline tickets too now. It's the same thing. Canada's always more expensive now. It's crazy.
So there's just too much red tape.
Yeah.
Right
now.
Exactly. But and you see that in everything, which is so detriment to just thriving. It's just get out of the way.
Yeah.
Just let things be done. Let things build. We've gone how many decades of making mistakes? Like just let us do our shit.
What is that costing though? Approximately, we don't have to know a ballpark. Like, what do you feel like that's costing the entire market as a whole in terms of opportunity cost and like. You know, let's say there's like this whole project. I know that's a loaded question.
Yeah, even me, like, I don't know. That is a loaded question,
but like,
I don't know.
So let me just explain my thought here, right? Yeah. Because the cost of red tape it's causing the discretionary spending to get cut back. It's causing the opportunity cost for young people to actually buy a house. like it's probably in like the 200 billion.
Oh yeah, as an opportunity. It's also forcing the asset prices to go up, the rent prices to go up. It's all like a trickle down effect.
Exactly. Right?
So it's affecting the entire economy because now people are going to have less money to just spend on everything else and putting like a bigger and bigger, bigger portion of what they make into just having a place to live, whether that be rent or own, either or.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's super detrimental.
So if they, let's just say hypothetical, let's say a new leader gets elected. We're not going to name people because this is not what we're talking about, but yes. He's running on a platform, getting rid of all this red tape. You get rid of all that stuff. That probably streamlines the entire process to make it affordable by maybe 3 years, 4 years. Like what do you feel like is?
I think if they got rid of all this red tape today, we would still probably need a good 5 years.
Well, yeah, because you would still need to build out all that infrastructure to get that supply going.
Yeah.
You would have a little bit of,
because we're already in a huge shortage to begin with. So we're already starting behind the eight ball, right? So it's going to be tough, honestly. That's why I tell people, I'm like, we have a proverb in real estate, and it goes, the best time to buy real estate is always yesterday. So I don't see for the next very foreseeable future, and that's if, you know, legislation changes and whatnot. And so it's big ifs. And how long does that take to actually start to roll out, even if it does change, until we actually start to see the market?
Forever.
So if you think it's going to get worse before it gets better, it's not. Like, houses and the price of homes is just going to keep going up this upcoming year, which goes against what a lot of people were talking about last year or the year before. You know, they were predicting a crisis, a housing crash. And
like, look, if you're a new buyer or someone that doesn't own anything and you want to get into the market, a crash is fantastic for you. It's not fantastic for people that own the assets.
If you have liquidity.
No, but that's exactly it. In that scenario, it's fantastic. But the thing is, we're not in an environment where we again, like, this is going to go more for a central standpoint. The crash is people that are talking about this crash, they're neglecting the conditions of the market and the desire for the economy to want to protect the wealth effect of the real estate. They need it. That's why we have things like when the crash, you had mortgage-backed securities along with quantitative ease. Mortgage-backed securities.
But that didn't happen in Canada. No. It wasn't affected in Canada.
Yeah, but you still have all
we were stuff. Actually very lucky in 08, Canada, as like a real estate market, because everything was like secure. U.S. was cowboy stuff. Now the rumor or sort of the discussion now is because there's all this leverage that's in the system, Canada is actually at a much higher risk of a hard landing from an economic standpoint.
Well, just like in 2008, our banking system's a lot more conservative than the U.S. is. So even when we had that huge housing crash in
$2 billion surplus, by the way,
we didn't feel the brunt of that force too much.
No,
we
didn't. You know?
And so I think, like I said, the economists now were kind of predicting the same thing again. And what they failed to remember from 2008 was that just wasn't the case in Canada, and it still wasn't the case in Canada this time around. And it's not going to be moving forward, I think. Because, like I said, things take time. And market cycles are long.
And the only way I see that ever really happening is you have to either... Something significant has to happen in the global landscape that's just beyond government control and manipulation.
Yeah.
Or you have to have government literally say, well, I don't care what happens to asset prices anymore. Then there's no possible way to lower interest rates to make sure asset prices stay up. Because then if you just, like, if I was an objective economist and I came in, I said, okay, I want to play the long game. I need to care about generation after generation. I don't really care what happens in the short term with the housing market or anything. Government's about to reduce social spending, cut deficits, cut all these things, no, get out of the way, let the market go. Hey, interest rates, I might say, you know what? I might start raising interest rates again because I want to reward savers. I want to reward this. Then, okay, shit might hit the fan. But we're nowhere near in that kind of economic environment because that's not the economic conditions we have, or nor the desire to do that economically. So we're not in that environment. So that's why I don't think we would see that kind of pullback. The only way I would see that is this is something I've been talking about for a long time, and this is something I want to share with you and see where your guys are headed. So one of the biggest theses I have is a thesis within the next decade, and it has to do with the transition of boomers and the old population that are about to phase out of the system through retirement and through death. When you die, obviously the asset is no longer there. It passes on to your family member. Now the question becomes is, when I inherit the house, can I afford to maintain that house? That's one thing. Right. Not a lot of everybody can. If you inherit it from your family, if you're your parents, okay, I might have to pay a capital gains tax, but it's nothing wild.
Well, that's why you set up a will.
Exactly. You know, so that's one, that's the effect. And two, so the main effect is the retirement and the death, because one is when you retire, I need to liquidate my house. If I can't refinance the house because the bank won't allow it or interest rates are too freaking high, I might have to sell my house. Now, if I sell my house, I flood the market with homes, assuming a general population does that or enough people do it. Or two is I die and my house gets passed on. But because I already own something, I already have all these costs, I can't afford to maintain it. So I continue to sell it. So my thesis really ties into this transfer of generation. That's more correlated to. So in the next decade to 15 years, a lot of homes are not going to be lived in anymore because the boomers make up majority of the housing in North America.
Right.
So I have.
And they've paid off all their mortgages, by the way.
Yeah, they're paid off. And even if they didn't pay them off in full, like when they bought them for like nothing.
$200,000.
So even if they took a second mortgage, they probably have like 100K left.
Yeah, exactly.
There's this kind of flood effect. And again, it can go so many different ways. It can go that because of, let's say it's all paid off and I'm inheriting a second house, I might want to keep it because it's not that expensive. I'm paying a capital gains tax, or am I in a situation where I can't afford it? So everyone that's about to inherit their parents' house actually can end up flooding it back to the market. These are just thoughts. I don't have a certain conclusion, but I think if there's going to be a real massive pullback in the real estate, I think that would be one of the main triggers.
Interesting thesis. And this is what I'll say about that. Go. I think that you're going to see, I don't think everybody's just going to sell their parents' house. And the reason for that is, at least in Canada, maybe in the U.S., like they have a lot more supplies. So, hey, why not?
Well, you can write off depreciation. So that's a totally different tax system.
But in Canada, like I said, we have such a shortage of housing. And we've never had a larger percentage of the population renting. That I think we're going to see those people that are in their early 30s who are now inheriting their parents' house just move into the paid off house. Why sell
it? Pay the capital gains tax and pay the
tax. Or if they already have a condo downtown that they don't want to move out of because they just love their corner unit facing the skyline of Montreal, it's already a paid off house. They could just rent it at a profit.
Yeah.
Right? So I think there's going to be a chunk of that population that's not going to necessarily sell the house. They might just move into it because they've been living in a shoebox apartment downtown, or they just couldn't afford to buy a house for their family and they've just been renting all these years. I think there's a good portion of the population that's going to be in that type of situation. Or they'll just rent it out because it's a paid off property. Why not?
Yeah.
And they know if they've learned anything over the last 20 years, it's like, well, if it's worth $1 million now, imagine when I'm 50 years old.
Yeah.
What the house is going to be worth. Let me just rent it out until I'm 50 and then I'll sell it.
Yeah.
And one of the other thoughts I have is, okay, so.
That will happen if employment drops drastically. Yes,
but it's also thinking to about this, is what percentage of the population are boomers?
I don't know, in Canada, is it a significant portion?
I know that
it's a significant portion. I don't know the exact amount.
So in the next 15 years, majority of boomers probably will not be on this face of the earth.
True.
They'll be out. So in this framework, it's if majority of the population is made up of boomers and majority of boomers now phase out, that leaves up a massive gap in the real estate market. It also leaves a significant opportunity. Again, I don't have the answer. It's just, I know there's something that's going to happen from this transition.
I think it'll be positive.
It's about 23%.
It could. That's it. Yeah. I don't know. And the thing is, it could be positive for everybody that's been left out for a decade.
Yeah.
That might want to finally get in.
Yeah.
And that demand that comes in might just help keep prices up. Yeah. Might not necessarily push it all the way up, but it might
I will say this, because we're looking at numbers. The census has 9.5 million baby boomers in Canada. Population is 40. So you're looking at 24%. So it's almost a quarter. It's almost a quarter of the population.
And not even all of those boomers own properties.
No,
some of them have sold them already.
Right, exactly.
And they've just been renting an apartment because like all the kids are moved out. I've done that for clients myself this past year. People that are downsizing. Because the kids are moved out, they're like 60 years old, they're 55 years old.
And mortgage
like,
is I don't paid need
a
off.
House. Yeah. They sell their house, they move into a small condo, just them two. Yeah. They have all their amenities, they're happy.
Yeah.
It's just a little spidey sense in me that says, just I want, like for me being the macro and I like long-term, it's like, this is just this is my main variable that I've always been a little doubtful is I want to watch this and see how that transition happens and how it impacts the asset.
Well, let's say out of that 25%, even just 10% of those 25% have houses that then hit the market. Hey, in the next 10 years, that's still a 10% increase
in volume
of houses in the market. So Yeah, I mean, it should help.
There might be a huge competitive environment at that same time that just keeps prices there. It doesn't actually lead to a collapse in prices because there's so many people competing for houses. Yeah. Again, these are factors. For me, it's just, again...
This I still think it'll help net benefit overall, for sure.
It can go very positive. It can go very negative. Yeah. It's just... That was my main one thesis of risk to look out for as time moves on because... Yeah. I find that the transition from boomers to, in any aspect, whether we're talking culturally, geopolitics, financially, that transition is going to have a massive ripple on the world. Yeah. And so it's just my risk spidey sense kicking in saying, just watch out for that type of
But also, they're not just going to be getting the houses. They're also going to be getting whatever investments in stocks.
Correct.
That their parents hold.
Assuming they have a will set up.
Well,
or they have too much debt on
because,
the side.
Or not too much debt.
Yeah, and so, to you, I leave you all of my debt.
Because the thing, if you accept your assets, you accept the debt with it.
Yeah,
of course.
So you're stuck with both sides of that.
To my favorite son, I leave you my debts.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it gets passed down. That's a problem. That's indirectly. That's a tax too, because that's inflation into your fucking. Well,
you
my
pay,
French,
you don't
discretionary
inherit,
spending.
You don't inherit any of that free will. You have to pay that. You have to pay taxes on all that stuff.
Do you inherit credit card debt?
Yeah. Yeah. If you accept a will, it comes with everything. You can't take just an asset
even credit card debt,
and not, because now your liabilities and your assets belong to you. If you accept, you can't accept just half of the equation.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's why.
Fun.
I want to talk about, because we've spent most of it focused on residential.
Right.
A lot of real estate agents, when they start in residential and then they're like, hey, I want to get into commercial. And then eventually they end up doing both. So do you have an aspiration to do that? And if so, what do you see as a potential opportunity in commercial real estate?
Oh, I've already started that.
Okay, there you go.
So nice. I should have my commercial license in the next 2 months max.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and it's funny, I'm more fascinated by commercial real estate. It's definitely a lot tougher.
Bigger scale, bigger property. Scale,
a transaction could take between 6 months to a year before you even see a paycheck.
Yep.
Right. But I do think that we have a huge need for multiplexes. You know, multifamily living homes. I mean, like 26 plexes and up, basically. A huge demand.
So that would be more of where you would focus, would be more on that type of property.
Yeah,
so not necessarily like, let's say, like massive Walmart stores that want to rent.
Or warehouses.
Oh, industrial is killer. The guys that are in an industrial and specialize in industrial, they never go hungry. That's where like the big money's at. Yeah. And that's definitely something I want to learn. Like, why not learn it all?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's one step at a time. Correct. So first I'm going to focus on, you know, becoming as specialized as I can in multiplexes. And then I'm going to also focus on industrial and commercial, like even commercial leases, commercial buildings, malls, whatever else, stuff like that. See where it takes me. Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot of activity on that side too. I feel like, especially this last year, the industrial and the commercial real estate has actually done a lot better than residential. Like, what are some of the numbers that you saw this year particularly?
Well... Commercial real estate actually came down a little bit higher than housing prices on average, which makes sense. I mean, unless you were really managing your building well and you were constantly like trying to bring up the rent slowly and making sure you have good renters in there or upgrading the property so that the value has gone up by a significant amount, when interest rates shoot up all of a sudden, and 70% of Canadians are on variable. If you haven't updated your building at all, you haven't been bringing up the rents, good luck going to refinance. Now you're forced to sell, right? And so a building that, you know, is making you maybe $1,000 a month in profit, even after tax, might now be costing you money every month. So we saw it get hit a little bit harder, but also who's buying commercial real estate? People that have a significant amount of money.
Our net worth, absolutely.
And so there's always going to be a market for commercial. Like when times are tough, that's when rich people buy up commercial properties.
Well, pennies on the dollar. You have that liquidity for sure.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Plus they want to get out of the volatility of like stocks. So they tend to store it. Anyway, in hard times, you tend to want to store your money into hard assets.
Yeah.
Real estate, gold, businesses.
Yeah.
Because you want to get out of where there's a lot of volatility. You want to get things where people always have a need and demand for. Houses will always have a need and demand for.
Yeah. And managing just, like one sixplex isn't super hard.
No.
It's not like you.
It's good cash flow too,
yeah,
right?
It's not like you're buying 100 doors. You know, but yeah. And if you want, you can get a property manager of 4.5%, you know, of the rents. And you never have to
worry about it
too much.
So when you look back on the last couple of years or the last 2 years, I mean, you just started. And listen, again, congrats on this year, 40 transactions. That's amazing.
Thank you.
What's your message to people who want to get in this game ultimately?
As a broker?
Yeah, and I think even just in general, right?
This is a business of relationships, okay? If you're not the type of person that is personable, likes people, is social, you're going to have a really tough time. Not everybody's born to be a real estate broker. You need thick skin because no matter what happens, it's always your fault. You know, doesn't matter what it is. So you're always kind of managing, you're in crisis control all the time. So
so much expectation when it comes to houses.
Really, well, that's it. And there's a lot of money on the line. Like, these are people's biggest investment.
It's their nest egg almost.
Yeah. Like, if you mess something up on a contract or drafting something, I mean, it costs your client thousands and thousands of dollars. So
that's why notaries are important.
Yeah. Also, rereading your contracts before sending them out to sign is probably a good idea. Proofread, please.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that would be my advice. If you're not that type of person, I don't think this is the right business for you. You know,
because you got to build up the trust. I guess because it's such a personal thing. Is people? Why would I trust you with such a big asset?
I do want to make a quick comment though, because you're a pro at what you do, by the way. Just want to make sure that's clear. But I've gone to real estate events, and I always get someone introduces themselves. They're like, "Hi, I'm in real estate," and it's like you didn't even build that connection yet. There was no like actual discussion, and then they hand you their card, and it's just like, I'm like, what have we connected on? Like, what have we had a discussion on? She's like, "Call me if you want to sell a house," and I'm like, "Okay." And then in my head, I'm like, I don't even know you. And like, I feel, and this is nothing personal against you, I just feel like that whole, the industry right now, for whatever reason, and those people never make it, by the way. Yeah. Those people will never make it because they don't understand the fundamentals of building relationships. Yeah. But that's what you talked about at the beginning of this episode, which is like, you have to figure out a way to stand out, right? But that's just, again, that's just me nitpicking on the industry.
It's funny you mentioned that because, you know, last year I went to go talk to one of the top brokers in Montreal because I wanted to join his team. We sat down, we had a chat, and he goes, "I don't want to hire you. You don't need a job on a team." He's like, "You could do this alone." Yeah, he's like, It'd be a waste for you." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, with the amount of people you know and your reach," he goes, "don't spend 100 hours a week just cold calling strangers." He goes, "just have conversations with everybody in your circle of influence. And don't start the conversation with, 'Hey, it's Chuck, how you been? Do you know somebody who's looking to buy or sell a house right now?' Just talk to them, ask them out to coffee, like build relationships. And guess what? Yep.
They'll come to you.
Naturally in the conversation, they're going to ask you, 'Hey, what are you doing these days?' And then that's when you take the opportunity to be like, 'Oh, well, I work in real estate actually.' And you know what? 11 times out of 10, they're going to be curious. They're going to be like, 'Oh, like what's going on in the market? What can you tell me?' They want to know.
Yeah.
So I think if you take that approach as a broker, yes, it might take a little longer to start seeing that ball rolling.
But you're playing the long game.
But it's going to be a lot better, and people are going to enjoy talking to you a little bit more.
Also, more like you're more likely to get more referrals. More.
Yeah.
It's the social effect. Is okay. I trust Chuck. We can have a conversation. He gives me his take. I like the way he looks at things. I have questions. I know he can answer them, or he'll figure it out for me. I'll refer you.
I've actually been to parties where I have an entire conversation with somebody, and then we're done talking, and they go, "Let me add you on Instagram." I haven't told them anything about real estate yet. And then they add me, and they're like, "Oh, you're a broker?" And then they start like asking me questions, and now it's like, "Oh, well, I've already built that rapport with you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now I feel comfortable asking for advice."
Yeah.
And I think that's just the best approach.
It's because it's a warm approach rather than a cold approach.
Yeah. You don't want to be like a used car salesman. Enough of those.
Or the insurance brokers, right? So, No, this has been awesome, man. A lot of good intakes on what we think is going to happen. Look, we'll see what the market does. I think we're all in agreement here, though. They got to get rid of the red tape.
Oh yeah,
the red tape is just killing everything. All further developments. But where can the listeners find you here, Chuck?
Frischman Realty.
You're on Instagram. You're on TikTok. He's on Twitter. No, mainly on Instagram.
Too old for TikTok. It's like another app to learn. I can't do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I'm on Instagram, Frischman Realty. That's where I also post most of my videos and content. So.
Well, look, thanks so much for sharing the insights. It's going to be a fun year next year. As we wrap up 2023, we're going to look forward to an interest rate cut. There's probably going to be a few of them next year. I don't know how aggressive they're going to be. We'll have to watch the bond deals.
It'll go based on how the CPI or inflation metric moves. That'll be their driving factor.
But no, it's been good. It's great to get some insights into a space that, look, I think everyone needs to have exposure at some point, one way or the other, right?
Plus, if you guys want to dabble into macro, you need to pay attention to everything, especially such an asset class that has such an impact on the wealth effect and the market conditions of the global economy, that if you don't follow real estate, you're leaving a huge piece of the puzzle out of your framework. So you always want to look at everything.
Yeah.
So I agree with that 100%.
Chuck, thanks so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks, guys. And make sure to follow and subscribe. Thank you.
And we'll see you next time, guys, on the New Gen Mindset Podcast.
Ciao, guys.
Cheers.